Welcome to the Dynasty Guru podcast, episode 3. I'm your host, Tom Trudeau, joined by Andrew Ressler. This is the first Dynasty Guru podcast where we're going to talk a little bit of hoops. The Dynasty 200 for February were just released, and I'm already worried that I'm too low on Nikola Jokic. And that's where we want to start. Andrew, do you think Nikola Jokic is a top 5 Dynasty asset, or you feel like I had him had it right? Earlier where I ranked him 11th.
I think you've been high on Jokic for quite some time, but I think you're still too low on him. I think he's almost undeniably a top 10 asset. You have been 11 right now, which isn't bad, but he's almost undeniably top 10. Right now, if you look at the top 15 by 36 minutes on the player rater, this is from Basketball Monster, he's already in the top 8 of people who are playing more than 20 minutes a game. He's young. He's starting to get minutes. It's hard for me to see how he doesn't end up consistently putting up top 15, top 20 seasons starting now.
Yeah, do you think that, I think his playing time is actually, we think there's probably room for him to play more. He's only, for the season, only averaging 26 minutes. That's certainly ticked up, but I think he's still sort of capped around the low 30s. Do you think Nikola Jokic has it in him? He's only 21 and turning 22. PER of 26.37. Do you think he has it in him to flirt with top overall value at some point?
I really think he does. I think the easiest way to talk about that is last month in January when he played 30 minutes a game, he was averaging 24 points, 11 rebounds, 5 assists, a block and a half, 1.1 steals. And he's shooting 61% from the field that month and 87% from the line. He's not going to hurt you anywhere. And he'll put up elite points and rebounds, above average blocks and steals. And his percentages are incredible for someone at the position. I could see him being a top 3 player as early as next season.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think he's still, even after the breakout that he's enjoyed, I still think he's a buy. And especially if you are someone who's looking towards the future, I think, based on the Euro bias and the fact that he doesn't play that much relative to other superstars, and the name brand just isn't there, I still think he's available. You're going to have to pay up, don't get me wrong. But I still think he's available. If you were to offer like a LeBron and a second piece, I would do that, no problem. And I love clearing roster space to go fishing on the wire. So let's talk for a second about how you could have seen Nikola Jokic coming, just in terms of a process question. You know that I've been high on Jokic for a while, and it wasn't because I'm a really good scout, because I'm not.
I think you told me once or twice that he had a pretty good warp coming out of his draft class.
and I remember on draft day in 2014, I wanted the Knicks to take him in the second round. Purely because he was on Kevin Pelton's list of second round steals with a warp projection of 3.1. And I know for most people that doesn't mean anything and without context, but I'll give you some context. Joel Embiid had a warp projection of 2.9. And so he had a warp projection that was commensurate with a potential star.
Just to give you a quick pat on the back. I've got this email from 2015 before the draft when you said Jokic, who you believe was a top 5 prospect, long-term available. So this isn't new. This is not something that came out of nowhere.
Right. And again, I think the point to emphasize there isn't that Tom's a genius, because I'm not, and I've been wrong a million times, as you could also point out a million times I've been wrong, but rather that there are opportunities for arbitrage and to find these guys before they hit. The same to a much, much lesser extent can be said for Clint Capela, who was free basically last year and also had a warp projection above 3. It doesn't guarantee anything. There are plenty of kids, Dante Exum and Jokic's teammate Jusuf Nurkic, who had really good warp projections that have busted. But it's a quick tool to identify guys that we think have star potential. The other thing we like to look at is the Carmelo forecast on 538. I think Jokic, his 5-year market value is pegged at $217 million, and he was labeled an all-star on 538's Carmelo forecast.
For anyone who's not that familiar, saying all-star doesn't it's even better than what you think of All-Star. That basically means he's a top 20 to 25 guy.
Right. I mean, I can't imagine there were more than 10 and 15 players at most who had a higher five-year market value. And I think it was higher than Kristaps Porzingis, who we'll get to in a little bit, because it's becoming increasingly hard to make the case for Porzingis over Jokic. But yeah, he's someone that we like long term and we think is for real. The last thing before I move on as far as just how you can develop how one could have been confident on Jokic. Last year, coming into the season, I think we were all relatively excited about him because he had a big year. But I think a lot of people lost faith when he started the year off slowly and wasn't getting the playing time. He had a PER, player efficiency rating, of 21.58. This needs to be one of the tools in your tool shed. It is not in the end-all, be-all at all. But to be able to reference it and understand what it means and the various components, the assist rate, true shooting percentage, and just get an understanding of what you can expect from each player. If you had looked at it last year and seen the assist rate of 19.4, that's like a bad point guard assist rate, basically. So for someone to say at this point, I had no idea that he had this type of assist potential. Well, if you'd looked at the numbers last year, you could have seen that he was doing this. And for him to have done it last year when he was 20 in 80 games, it wasn't like a small sample. So you can have rough seasons, but by and large, basketball players tend to normalize fairly quickly. I've even seen 10 games. Now, an injury can put someone through a shooting slump, and then that can make those 10 games look ugly. But in general, a 10-game sample is about where you can start to be reasonably confident about what sort of player that guy is. So the fact that Jokic was as good as he was last year,
that was an 80-game sample.
That was 80-game sample.
He was pretty consistently great.
Yeah, and
in just 21 minutes.
The point is that you could have seen this coming if you were patient.
The other thing for me that I personally tend to value a lot and I like to look for in young guys is their steal and block rate, because those things tend to normalize especially fast, and it gives guys a much higher floor. So when you're looking at a guy like Jokic, the fact that he put up a steal and 0.6 blocks in just 22 minutes, it means even if he doesn't turn into a stud on offense and even if he's not putting up 25 points and 15 boards, he still has a very high floor in value if he's a good real life player.
Yep. Yeah, and if you go back to that Carmelo page, you could see his combined block and steal rate was about 4.6%. For reference, Draymond Green flirts with 5% every year. So he's one of the better block steal guys in the league. So yeah, that's how you become a fantasy superstar, or the blocks and steals. That's what separates the guys who can score, can pass, can rebound, and maybe even do it efficiently. Those blocks and steals are that's how you become the top overall player one day.
I don't want to spend too much time on Jokic, but before we leave him, there's also room for improvement here, not just in terms of the points and rebounds, but he's already shooting 35% from three, and you're seeing now a lot of bigs are moving further and further out to three-point range. If he moves that 0.6 threes a game up to one or two, which is reasonable, that's how he becomes the number one player in fantasy, and that's not a crazy potential outcome.
Right. So I had him in tier three, 11th overall. Are you putting him in your own second tier, or is he even a tier one guy with Giannis, Towns, and Durant?
I'd still have him in tier two, behind those, right around where Anthony Davis is, though, which I think for a lot of people would sound pretty crazy. His age relative to Davis and his lack of injury history, I might even put him right above Davis. I think he should be top five. I wouldn't put him in the top tier with those three, because those three already are all top 5-10 fantasy players. Karl-Anthony Towns and Giannis are two of the top five players this year already. And they're basically just as young. So I'd still have them in a tier alone. And Kevin Durant is putting up quietly one of the more dominant fantasy seasons. Obviously, Steph last year put up a season that's not replicable, but Kevin Durant's far and away the best player in fantasy right now, and I'd be hard pressed not to have him in that tier. So I'd agree with tier one, and then I'd have Jokic with Anthony Davis and Steph Curry and Kawhi and Harden in tier two.
So speaking of Harden, I think that some of the harder players to evaluate when you play nine category fantasy are those volume guys like Harden, Westbrook, and LeBron that just absolutely fill it up, but due to the turnovers, they give up. They concede a lot of value. If you're in a rotisserie league, that's particularly painful because you're at the bottom of the league in turnovers. If you're in head to head, though, you can build around them and make that one of your punt categories. When you and I care a lot about the player rater, how are you evaluating those guys? And to what extent do you discount their negative value from the turnovers, if at all?
So I think those are guys that I tend not to target in nine category leagues because their perception is of a top three guy, top five guy. If you look at ESPN's fantasy rankings, I think they had Russell Westbrook at one almost all season. They might still have him there. I haven't checked him for a while, but he's tend to be thought of as the best or second best player in fantasy. And he just,
and you're talking about like just the rankings of their staff writers, you mean?
Yeah, just their staff writer rankings, just the basic staff writer rankings, which come up every once in a while. They have him at one or two, and same with Harden. And that just doesn't work because it's not just turnovers. Both of them also hurt you in field goal percentage quite a bit. So that's two categories you're getting hit with. And I think their triple double stats get a lot of people excited. So if you're paying up top five value for him, top six value, I don't think it's worth it. But these guys, if you pair them with another guy with a similar profile, you can dominate points, rebounds, assists.
So basically, if you punt turnovers, is that what you're saying?
If you punt turnovers and go with another high volume guy, like a perfect second tier guy, if you're in like a 12 team league with a Westbrook or a Harden, would be like a John Wall.
Yeah.
Or even as he's getting better, he's not there yet, a Joel Embiid, who seems like he's going to have a huge turnover rate.
Yep. On the other hand, I guess look, and we're not trying to say these guys aren't hugely valuable.
No.
I think the distinction we would make is that they're. Turnovers is still, in my opinion, the most ignored category in fantasy, followed by percentages. And if you can get for Harden or Westbrook, a player that is in the similar tier, like Kawhi Leonard, Jokic, or even Towns and Giannis.
I think a lot of owners would do that swap. They'd probably give up a Kawhi for a Harden or a Westbrook, and I think that would be a big mistake. I think Kawhi is, I think right now he's probably, what, three or four on the player rater? And I think he should probably continue to be there. He's great. I would put him right in there. I don't know if we mentioned it before, but with that Anthony Davis, Steph Curry, Kawhi, and Jokic, I put the four of them. I wouldn't really be able to distinguish between them.
Yeah, Harden's had a few more games on him, so he's a little higher by averages. Kawhi is a tick above Harden. They're 5-6 by averages.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in Kawhi. He's a great fantasy player and a great real life player.
Yeah,
I would take Kawhi, and I would take him long term as well, because a small dip in usage for Westbrook or Harden will really hurt their value because the turnovers will stay, the field goal percentage will stay. Whereas Kawhi puts up steals and blocks, and his free throw percentage rate is insane. A lot of things that people don't pay attention to as much, and I would trust him to consistently put up better seasons than those two.
Yeah, Kawhi is now second in fantasy in terms of free throw impact, which I definitely did not notice until recently. I mean, I guess the last thing on these volume guys is that it's because turnovers are, because volume is the most expensive thing to target in fantasy. It's easier said than done to punt turnovers, because you're going to have to pay up. Whereas if you go the other route and you try to build an efficiency team, and I know that strategy is more commonly associated with a rotisserie strategy, but I like to do it because I want that advantage, that those percentages, and then when you get into the playoffs, you're going to play against other teams that also have really good volume guys, and I want to win turnovers. You know, it counts just as much as points in any other category.
And I think a lot of people forget about that. Being first versus fifth in turnovers, or when I say first from the bottom or fifth from the bottom, is a huge difference, because in the playoffs, you're always going to have the top six or seven worst turnover teams.
Yep.
So if you're near the bottom of that, because if you have high volume guys, you're going to have a lot of turnovers. But if you have significantly less than the other high volume guys, you're going to win that category every time. So in the playoffs, punting turnovers becomes much more effective.
So what are you doing with there's a couple of players that I think we believe can be superstars. And I think by most objective measures, they're tracking. They're exactly where they need to be. They just haven't broken out all the way quite as quickly as we would want. And that's Kristaps Porzingis and D'Angelo Russell. Porzingis, in many ways, has been a disappointment. I'm a huge Knicks fan. The good news is his lack of growth has meant that the Knicks are terrible and they hopefully will actually rebuild. But his PER has actually declined by a little bit. Now, that's a little misleading because I think that the true shooting percentage, and that's what matters to me the most, is the shooting efficiency has improved. He's conceded a little bit in rebounding. His rebounding's down from last year. I still love Kristaps Porzingis, and I think especially if you are a kind of a scouting type, you can make a case that he has more upside than Jokic based on his size and ability to move side to side and protect the paint and play for 36 minutes as your rim protector. But it's been a little slower than we'd expect. And that usually means that you have to, the ultimate trajectory is a little bit lower. Same with D'Angelo Russell, who, and don't get me wrong, I still love these guys, but, what do you see long-term? If you're a rebuilding team, are you targeting these guys with confidence that they're going to be able to develop into the tier two type superstars? So
of the two of them, I would say I'm definitely more nervous about D'Angelo Russell. Mostly for him, it's positionally. He hasn't really shown whether or not he's a point guard or a shooting guard. And he doesn't seem to run the offense in a way that seems like he'd be the point guard. So they're considering using another combo guard with him. It's unclear whether or not his usage will ever be high enough, like the Hardens or the Westbrooks of the world, to really put up top 10, top 20 fantasy stats. And it would be more appealing if he was elite in other areas, but he's shooting pretty poorly as well. His true shooting percentage has been very bad. He's shooting 76% from the free throw line, which from a point guard is pretty rough. He's shooting 39% from the field. He's a great athlete, and his steal rate is great. And his Carmelo projection is incredible, so I still really believe in him, but I'd push him down a little bit to kind of the top 30, top 35 instead of the top 20. Whereas with Kristaps, I have almost none of that same hesitation. So with Kristaps, you look at his stats. He went from 14 points a game to 18.5. He's shooting 45% from the field, 38% from three. He's putting up pretty good stats. Some of his loss in fantasy value this year has been a dip in free throw percentage, but I just don't buy that. I think he's too good of a shooter, and this is my expert non-basketball opinion, but I got to think that he'll get his free throw percentage back up somewhere to where it was last year. It doesn't make sense for him to become worse of a free throw shooter. And he's still just 21, so I would hold off. If you look at a guy who we both love, Giannis, he went from, in his year 20 season to 21, from 13 points to 17 points. And I think a lot of people they lowered the ceiling a little bit. And I think it was a mistake because he had a breakout this year. I wouldn't be surprised if Kristaps had a similar breakout next year. I wouldn't move him down at all. In the conversation when we were talking about Jokic, that was not an indictment on Porzingis, who I'm still very high on. It's more of just an extra praise on Jokic. I would still keep Porzingis in tier three in that 8 to 11 range, and I still very much believe in him long term. D'Angelo Russell, who you had 15, I'd move him down to tier 5. Reason why I wouldn't move him down further is because his Carmelo rating, his prospect profile are all really great.
Yeah, that's exactly the reason I have him where I do. Is he's still a such good prospect pedigree. It's not that common to have the scouts and the data agree. The stats based models like Warp and Carmelo. I also think that we're kind of selling him short as far as the progress he has made this year. You're right that you want the shooting efficiency isn't quite where you want it to be, but he has made gains as a distributor. His assist rate has increased about 5%. He went from 4.7 per 40 to 7.3. He's actually rebounding a little bit better. It's kind of this, it's the steady incremental gains that is maybe more common with a perennial all-star contender instead of a perennial superstar who is a slam dunk to be in the all-star game. So I'll concede there's some risk with Russell there's plenty of risk he doesn't become a superstar, but he hasn't even turned 21. He will turn 21 later this month. And for him to have an above average league PER where he does now, combined with the pedigree, that's what gives me the confidence to rank him where I do. I also just think it's tough to find these volume guys that are going to touch the ball every possession and score, put up points and assists and hit threes. And Russ, like you said, Russell has I think 75th percentile steal rate in college, which is good. It's not great, but I do like his chances to continue to develop into a potential perennial all-star.
Yeah, and I don't want to undersell that improvement in the assists. From 4.7 to 7.3 is a pretty dramatic improvement from year one to year two. And point guard's a very tough position to learn. And point guards tend to kind of develop slower than other positions. So I definitely believe in him. I'm not moving him outside the top 40. I just would have him down one tier just because the other guys in the tier right now are guys like Miles Turner. Right now you had him above Miles Turner. Miles Turner I'd be a lot higher on than D'Angelo Russell just because he also has an equally high ceiling, but his floor seems higher. I still believe in D'Angelo Russell's ceiling. I just think the floor is lower than what I thought it was maybe a year back.
So let's talk about a couple of really exciting prospects that had really devastating injuries in the last couple weeks. That's Zach LaVine and Jabari Parker, who I actually saw that this afternoon. So I guess what I want your take on is twofold. One, what do we think generally an ACL injury means to a player? And two, are they targets for you? I guess if you're contending, that's tough to make that investment. But if you're looking towards next year, are they people that you're looking at, and which guy do you prefer?
I think if I'm looking at next year, if I'm really in a rebuild mode, I'm going to go with Jabari. And the reason why I'm going to go with Jabari and I would pay up for Jabari is I do believe he's got that top 10, top 20 fantasy season capability. And the injury scares me for both of them. But with him, he was already showing some of the signs this year of what will make him really an elite player. The rebound rate still needs a little work, but he's hitting threes now. His three-point percentage skyrocketed from 25% to 36.5%, hitting 1.3 of those a game. He's putting up 20 points, 6 boards, doesn't turn the ball over, and gets a steal a game. He's just got a pretty good profile, and he's developed a lot as a player in general. And for me, that was particularly good to see because he recovered from an ACL injury. This isn't his first ACL tear. So
yeah,
he's torn it before, and he came back, and it took him a while, and you didn't really know the kind of player he was. So I think with an ACL injury, it's not that you can't heal. It's that it takes time, 12 months, sometimes 2 to 3 years until you're the player that you're going to be. So I think for both of these guys, it's probably going to be 2 to 3 years. But Jabari, I kind of discount last season a little bit because he was coming off the injury and I put a lot more weight on this season. So I kind of look at this season as really his second year, and the stats he's putting up in that kind of year are really impressive to me. I like LaVine as well, but I would take Jabari if I had to choose between them. And in terms of where I'd value them, I think you had them both in the 30s in your last rankings, if I remember. You got to drop
Parker,
him down
Parker
a tier.
Was 30, LaVine was 33, yeah.
Yeah, you got to drop him down a tier because it's not like a month injury or 2 month injury. This will be months before they come back. I think for Jabari, they said it'll be a year of recovery. And even when they come back, it'll be a few months after that until they're healthy. So even if your timeline is next year, they're not going to really help you that much. So we're looking at teams whose timeline is 2 years from now. So I drop them into the 50s.
Yeah, I think they need to drop it at least a tier. You look at someone like Chris Middleton, who is on his way back now. I think most recently I ranked him in tier 8, and if I remember correctly, he was probably around 100 when the season began, and that was with him being only months away. So
Yep.
They're definitely both guys I'm targeting. But if you can't get them for a bigger discount than, you know, a top 50 guy, because at 50s, we're talking like Carmelo Anthony, Bradley Beal, Victor Oladipo.
Real contributors.
Yeah, and not guys that are going to go away tomorrow. So, you know, you want to be able to turn some profit on this. There's got to be some reason for you to want to give up a healthy guy to get their upside in the future. I think where it makes sense is if you're a rebuilding team and you have someone like a Paul Millsap and maybe you're struggling to find someone that has the upside that's commensurate with a player of his ability. Maybe you target Parker because you get that blue chip young guy and you say, I'll see you in 2018, folks, or even 2019.
Yep. What about a guy like Carmelo Anthony or a Serge Ibaka, LaMarcus Aldridge, those kind of older guys putting up stats, should put them up for a couple years. Would you think to give up one of those guys for Parker or Levine?
Yeah, I mean, Levine, I don't know. I'm with you. First of all, I like Parker more. And I have to think that if you are a contending team and you just lost Jabari Parker, you're jumping at a chance to take Carmelo Anthony. I mean, I'm sure the birds are swarming and circling. What are those fucking birds? Why can't I remember what they're called?
Is it the crows? No, the vultures.
The vultures are circling. Yes, thank you. And so you don't want to sell low, but at the same time, if you're a contender, you're gonna want to cash out and get a producer. And I have to think that you could probably get a pick back in addition to Parker for someone like Anthony. So yeah, I mean, look, if my time is not now and I need to build for the future, go get Parker. You know, obviously you want to try and squeeze as much value as you can out of those deals. But if you can get them at a discount and, you know, maybe next year is still another rebuilding year for you and you're stockpiling high-end picks, go ahead and make that investment. I think it'll pay off in the long run. I guess where my concern is and where I would exercise caution, you and I took a moment to look back at some guys who have suffered ACL injuries recently. I mentioned before I'm a Knicks fan, and I remember Iman Shumpert his rookie year. He was a terror on defense. He just and his lateral quickness was unbelievable. He looked like a great athlete, and he had a career high free throw attempts per 36 minutes as a rookie, and he had a career high steal rate as a rookie. Now, you and I know that steals tend to peak when you're young. So maybe we're reading into this too much, but I worry about the athleticism, the side-to-side athleticism, preventing Parker and Levine from getting into the lane as easily, as well as the quick twitch muscles that allow them to rack up steals. Not that either of them were necessarily big steals guy. And then you look at someone like Derrick Rose.
Derrick Rose is the one who I think has got to be terrifying. You're talking about an MVP candidate putting up 20-plus points a game, 7 to 8 assists, and we think of him as if he's 35. He's 28, but there's no chance he's getting back to that. He hasn't been the same guy. He tore his ACL in 2012. He was putting up 22 points and 8 assists. His best point since then is 17.7. The best assist is about 4.9. His field goal percentage has taken a hit. And he just doesn't look like the same person. And we're talking about someone who's 4 years younger than LeBron James.
Yeah. But to my point about the steals and the blocks, Derrick Rose used to get, for 2 years in a row, he got 1.6 combined steals and blocks, which isn't great, but it's not the like one or one and change that he's gotten since the injury. And then if you look at Ricky Rubio, who I had forgotten had suffered a torn ACL, guess what? After he tore his ACL in 2012, that was when he had his career high free throw attempts of 5.6 per 36 minutes and his career high steals of 2.9 per 36 minutes. He's still a great steals guy, but his free throw rate has been cut almost in half. And this year the steals are down by a full steal per 36. So I do think we should caution that we can't just assume that these guys come back exactly as is. And that's why you need to demand that discount and make sure you're getting good value and not just buying them, assuming that you know, you have this, you know, that Parker will be good as new in a year and Levine will be good as new in a year.
Yeah, and I think this is also where kind of team construction comes in. If you don't have a star, and you're not going to win a league without a star, especially in basketball, you need one of those top 15, top 10 guys to carry your team. If you don't have one of those, it's worth the risk to chase it. If you kind of have a star already, you might be better off building around him instead of jumping at someone with that big of an injury risk, depending on what you're giving up. I think it's a team construction thing, because there is definitely a lot of risk with both of those guys.
So in any time a player goes down with an injury, it means for fantasy that somebody's going to be able to play more. I think I haven't exactly followed the Wolves beat or the Bucks really closely, but the guys that come to mind for me that I'm certainly intrigued by for Dynasty, and I'll be monitoring how it affects their playing time, are Tyus Jones for Minnesota and Chris Middleton for the Bucks. Let's talk about Tyus Jones first. He is a really fascinating prospect to me. And he fell into the back half of the first round in 2015. He was a big time statistical darling. I'm talking like top five in the class. But the scouts didn't agree. They saw his lack of size and maybe his ho-hum athleticism, and he fell to where he did. At this point in his career, Tyus Jones has a 39% assist rate, which is insane. It is higher than Chris Paul's assist rate. And so he's also shooting 40% from three. The only thing that's lacking is he's really does not look to score. I mean, part of the reason he can average all those, get all those assists is that he's definitely a pass first point guard to the extreme. But I mentioned that he was statistically really a darling of the warp model that Kevin Pelton uses. I should also mention that you and I know that Carmelo was not necessarily keen on him, mostly a product of his really poor true shooting percentage, which was off the charts bad last year, but he's fixed a lot of that. So I'm curious, for me, I'm thinking like maybe this guy, the situation isn't great with all the quality point guards that Minnesota has, but he's upped his true shooting percentage from 45, which is a nightmare, to 56, which is actually probably well above average for point guards. Is he someone you're targeting, and is it fair to say that he gets a massive boost in value?
I think this year he definitely gets a huge boost in value, and I don't, at risk of sounding like a bit of a broken record, the steal rate that he has is pretty extraordinary. 0.7 steals in 12 minutes a game this year, 0.8 in 15.5 last year, and his assist rate is incredible. His turnover rate is pretty low for a guy who dishes out that many assists. He's shooting 83% from the line. Just those three categories alone in assists, free throw percentage, steals, and that low turnover rate, that's a functional fantasy player. That's a top 100 guy, a top 80 guy. There are other players with that kind of profile who have done pretty well. You're talking about the Rajon Rondo types, Alfred Payton types. He doesn't rebound as well as them, but those assist and steal numbers, and a Ricky Rubio type, those assist and steal numbers are very exciting. So I think he's definitely a guy to watch. I think the two things I would be very curious about, which is what will differentiate him from just a guy who can put up top 100 stats with time versus a guy who will become a real contributor, is whether or not he keeps shooting this way. Because coming out of college, he wasn't really considered a shooter. That true shooting percentage was a little weak. I'd pay a lot of attention to his three-point rate and his free throw percentage, because if those stay high, then this is really a diamond in the rough. If he shoots 83% from the line and shoots 40% from three, which would be a bit of a stretch because we've never seen him do it before, but it's possible. He's been doing it this year so far. If he does that, then there's a real diamond in the rough here, and we could see him skyrocketing up your rankings. I think right now at 93, that's a little high for me, but I think if he maintains that three-point percentage and that free throw percentage with 25 to 30 minutes a game, he'll be a top 60, top 70 guy this year. And then you have to pay attention.
Yeah, I mean, another thing I'm looking for is the volume, because right now he's only averaging 11.6 points per 40. I mean, that part of how he can manage this efficiency gain is probably only shooting when he's wide open.
Yeah,
I mean, that's just not a lot of it for a guard to only be taking 1-3 a game in this day and age. He's definitely pass first to the extreme. At this point, I would put him even higher than where I had him, especially after the injury. And especially after seeing the way they're starting to fade out Ricky Rubio. And I think that Dunn even got a DNP the other day. Another guy I'd like to talk about at some point. So yeah, I'm really, really excited about Tyus Jones. But there is one red flag that I wanted to mention, which is his ESPN RPM. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so ESPN has this RPM rating, which I don't think is the be-all, end-all, but it kind of tells you a bit about how good a player is. It's kind of a good real-world analysis to try to understand whether or not someone's actually contributing to the team. And that's been a reason why someone like me has always been high on Ricky Rubio, because I never really feared the minute changes. I didn't really think he'd lose a job, and I still don't think Ricky Rubio will lose a job, because he seems to be doing a lot on the defensive end, and one of the ways to calculate that is with defensive RPM. Ricky Rubio has always been really strong there, and this year so far, you look at Ricky Rubio, he's got an RPM of 1.11, which isn't great, but it's basically 16th, 17th for a point guard. Tyus Jones is at negative 0.88, and that's near the bottom half. That's not in the top 30. That's a below-average point guard. I think one thing to keep you from being terrified of that is he's 20, and rookies and second-year players defensively tend to really struggle. So you tend to see low defensive RPMs, even for guys who can turn out to be stars. Even guys like Karl-Anthony Towns, Anthony Davis, these guys who you think will eventually be defensive stoppers have very low defensive ratings their first couple years. So I'm not terrified by it, but I do think it should temper the expectations this year, because Ricky Rubio, by RPM measures and other measures, seems to still be the much better player. So I still wouldn't expect him to overtake Ricky Rubio this season. And I think it's still a fear, whereas if he goes to another team, will he ever get 35 minutes a game? Is he a good enough defender, and does he do enough scoring to keep himself on the floor?
Right. Last note on Tyus Jones. You mentioned his steal rate. I think in last year he was in the 95th percentile. So definitely keep an eye on Tyus Jones, a guy we like to see an uptick in value both this year and beyond. But
he looks a lot to me. He looks a lot like a Ricky Rubio type player.
Yeah, that's actually
he's got a very similar actually, profile.
But he's shooting better than Rubio.
Shooting a little better. His true shooting percentage this year is 56%. Rubio's high is 53%, which is this year.
So and Rubio rebounded very well.
Yeah, Rubio's a better rebounder, but their assist rates. Rubio put up elite assist rates of about 40%, which is insane. Tyus is putting up elite assist rates. Similar turnover rates, very low turnover rates for the usage that they have. Tyus isn't as good of a rebounder. They're both not going to score. But Ricky Rubio, even without scoring, was putting up top 25, top 30 fantasy seasons. So you don't have to put up 20 points a game to be a contributor. Tyus Jones, if he gets 30 minutes a game, will be a top 50 fantasy player. I'm confident saying that. His steal rate's not going anywhere. His assist rate's not going anywhere. It's just a matter of whether or not he's a good enough real-life basketball player to get 30 to 35 minutes a game. If he does, there's no doubt in my mind he's putting up a top 40 fantasy season with that steal rate and assist rate.
So let's talk about his teammate. I don't know if we didn't necessarily plan on talking about Chris Dunn, but I think we have to, because he has been such a disappointment this season. He's a guy that was billed as someone who was NBA ready. His Carmelo forecast was great prospect. 5-year market value of $127 million, which is basically D'Angelo Russell territory.
Yep.
And I think part of the reason I let myself get really excited about him is I thought the floor would be so high because he had an average block rate as a point guard, and that includes centers, and he also had the elite steal rate. He was a good rebounder, and the scouts liked him, and he was taken high in the draft. So I thought he was one of those guys who had that rare combination of safety and upside. But he's really struggled in the NBA level. The only thing he can really hold his hat on is the steal rate and block rate's been there. He averages almost three combined per 36. But with the emergence of Tyus Jones, Rubio's still there. The playing time is in question. What are you doing with Chris Dunn?
Chris Dunn makes me really nervous. And the reason why is I just don't understand. I think it goes into the discussion of whether or not you trust NBA experience more or age. So I think some people would point to saying that Chris Dunn's a rookie. He's got time to improve. But Tyus Jones is 2 years younger. Tyus Jones is 20 years old. And Chris Dunn is 22. So yeah, Tyus Jones has been in the NBA an extra year. But when you've got a guy who's 20 years old, who's outplaying you by almost every metric at the same position, that gives me pause. I don't really see how you could justify playing Chris Dunn more than Tyus Jones based on how they played this year. And Tyus Jones shouldn't be going anywhere. So Chris Dunn has a lot of competition to get minutes. He's been honestly terrible. He's been terrible this season. And it's hard for me to expect him to become a contributor or a starter anywhere, because this is really, there's bad and then there's what he's been doing. He's really been horrible. His RPM is negative 3.31, which is basically the worst of anyone who plays more than 10 minutes a game at the point guard position.
So where would you have him? In terms of a veteran, if you had him and you wanted to win now and flip him for a veteran, where would you be happy to accept?
Well, what I do here is kind of look at him versus his competition. So I would put Tyus Jones above him. So I'd put Tyus Jones probably, I think you convinced me a little bit on Tyus Jones. I'd have Tyus Jones in tier 10 and I'd put him in tier 11. I'd put him behind there in the 100 to 110 range.
For those of you who don't have the list, the top 200 in front of you, tier 10 starts with 85, Rudy Gay.
Yep, and ends with Mo Harkless and Justice Winslow at 99 and 98. And then tier 11 is Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, Nikola Mirotic. And then the guys who I really think he belongs with are guys like Jaylen Brown and Caris LeVert and Ante Zizic. I think that makes sense for him, because a guy like Jaylen Brown, he doesn't have the same statistical pedigree, but I tend to trust NBA GM. So anytime a guy gets picked third, I tend to bias my opinion of him slightly, because GMs do this for a living. So I think his pedigree isn't that different than Chris Dunn's in my perception. And he's outplayed Chris Dunn. Both of them haven't been particularly impressive. Chris Dunn's not that young. I really think that they should be in the same tier. And a guy like Tyus Jones, who has put up interesting stats, is 2 years younger, even though he's got worse draft pedigree and Carmelo pedigree. It's too compelling when you see two guys on the same team with the same teammates and one of them just thoroughly outplaying the other.
Yeah, I think he... Look, it's been a nightmare season. He's done almost nothing positive. But I think... if you can find an owner who has them and they're panicking and they're seeing the depth chart hasn't shaken out the way they want to, it's even gotten worse because of Tyus Jones stepping in.
Zach LaVine opens up a few minutes.
Yeah, he does. But like I said, I think the most recent game there was a DMP. So I think, you know, I would feel very confident if you had like a Thaddeus Young, a Goran Dragic, George Hill, who's had a really good year. I would take that chance on Chris Dunn based on the pedigree.
Yeah, I see it. He wouldn't be the young guy at target. I'd rather a Tyus Jones, who would be cheaper. Even a Jamal Murray, because he's 19. I'd rather one of the younger guys. The age is what bothers me a lot. I'd even rather a Jaylen Brown, because Jaylen Brown, at least he's young. He's 19 as well. Or he's 20, I think.
He's a kid.
The fact that Chris Dunn is 22 and turning 23 in a month, that's a lot. I think you look at he's older than Giannis. You look at a guy like Giannis, he's older than him. He's older than a Jabari Parker. And I know he's a rookie, but he's old. He's a really old rookie. And if you're an old rookie, you got to be performing.
So on the other ACL injury news, there was Chris Middleton, who we think will be the favorite to take a lot of those minutes. On the other hand, they're probably going to want to work him in slowly, so he doesn't get the redraft boost that you might expect. what are you doing with Middleton as a dynasty asset? I'm looking up his historical rankings now, because this is a guy who was kind of like a discount Jimmy Butler.
Yep, I have him. I actually was just pulling this up a few minutes ago. He was 30th on the player rater last year.
For nine category leagues?
Yeah, for a nine category league, this is using Basketball Monster, nine category league based on per game value.
That's per game. So total value would go up. He was 22.
Yep.
Yeah. And the year before, he was 34 in only 30 minutes a game, I think. So, yeah, I mean, here's a guy with a lot of upside. I think he's not someone who excites people. And that's my kind of target. On the other hand, they're going to bring him along slowly. I think you have to rank him more aggressively than I did before the injury to Parker. I ranked him 63rd in tier 8. I think for me, he's comfortably in tier 7. What about for you?
Where does tier 7 begin again? Let me take a quick look. Yeah, I would have him comfortably in tier 7 in the 40s or 50s range. I might even have him higher than that. I think I'm nervous about his recovery, but he's young, and to have a guy that young, having put up two top 30-ish seasons at 25 years old, I think you could make an argument for him being a top 30 guy next year, and I think that would put him into tier 6. I'd keep him in tier 7 mostly because I think his value will be muted for the next couple months, because coming back from an ACL usually takes some time. I don't think he'll play that many minutes. And if I was an owner, I'm already targeting Chris Middleton, but if I were an owner in most leagues, what I'd do is I'd wait for the next couple weeks for owners who are very excited about having him back. I don't expect him to be putting up great stats over the next month or two as he's recovering from this injury, but in a few weeks, I would heavily, heavily target him, especially if any owner gets impatient. And I'd give up a lot of people in those tiers, like a Jeff Teague, a Paul Millsap, an Aldridge. I'd heavily target him, especially if you're looking towards next year, because I'm a big believer in him becoming a top 40 guy. Even if he takes a drop from where he was, that's still a top 40, 50 guy.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you. I think I'd stick with the tier 7 just because I do think they're going to bring him along so slowly. And there's always risk with guys coming back from injury that they're not quite the same. So I'd probably say, you know, he's around a top 50, 60 type asset.
I'd agree.
Before we break, I don't know if there were any kind of speculative guys you wanted to highlight, but Yogi Ferrell has been going off for the Dallas Mavericks. I think he should be way more interesting to redraft players because so much of his playing time is circumstantial, being on that garbage team. But I just wanted to take a quick moment. We actually saw him get traded tonight in a package for Al Horford in one of our dynasty leagues. I did a little bit of research on Ferrell because obviously, like most human people, I was mostly unfamiliar with him. And what I like about him is that when he went to the D League after getting demoted or cut by the Nets, I'm not sure, he was a 40-90 guy. He was making 40% of his threes and 90% of his free throws. And since returning to the NBA and this hot streak with the Mavericks, he's done the exact same thing. And for him to succeed in the NBA, that's going to have to be his calling card, because in college he had really, really bad rebound rates, block rates. He was not a good athlete. The steal rate and the assist rate were fine. But basically, I think the upside is like a Lou Williams type player. And so for me, I'm selling. I think that the odds that in the NBA he is in fact a 40-90 guy are low. I don't think he has the secondary skills to support this, and perhaps most importantly, the Mavericks can't possibly get worse at guard, and so I think as they bring in talent next year, should lose most of this playing time. But curious what you see.
I'd 100% agree with that. I'm definitely selling Yogi Ferrell. I just don't believe that he's a real NBA player. He doesn't really defend well. He's pretty short, and he's just not a good prospect. So it worries me, and I think it's just tough to stay on the floor. Because those gunners, especially if you don't play defense, it's really tough to maintain minutes. The guys who I'd prefer to look at if you're targeting one of those guys with minutes was something kind of like what's happened the past couple of years with a guy like Robert Covington. a guy who comes in, seems to play defense, plays a 3-and-D type player, or even like a guy like Rashawn Holmes this year. You have guys who are putting up interesting stats for teams. They're not exploding the world like a Yogi Ferrell, but they're showing the type of performance that can keep you in an NBA job. And Yogi Ferrell just doesn't seem like a modern NBA player. So unless he somehow maintains this 40% three-point shooting, it just doesn't seem like he has a job. Whereas a guy who plays good defense, who rebounds, those are the guys who I target in that range instead of a popular guy like a Yogi Ferrell.
Yeah, I think if you can flip him for someone like a Juan Hernan Gomez, a first-round pick who did have prospect pedigree discounted right now due to a lack of opportunity, that's a move.
I would definitely jump at that.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's going to do it for us. Just some housekeeping. If you like what you heard, rate and review on iTunes. You can join the conversation at facebook.com/group/thedynastyguru. You can follow the official Dynasty Guru Twitter page at Dynasty Guru. And feel free to just give us, you know, your feedback on how our first podcast went. It was, I know I had a good time. Andrew, anything you wanted to add before we break?
No, that sounds good. Thank you guys for joining us.
Peace.